This episode was sponsored by Critical Dice and the Endless Bag of Dice.
Welcome to the Compendium, a resource that's designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
Yeah, so challenge rating is actually kind of the next thing I wanted to get into. So why don't we just unpack that while we're talking about it?
Yeah, so challenge rating is a numeric value given to every single monster to give you a sense of, as a dungeon master, how difficult is this foe? And if they defeat it in some way, how many XP is it worth? And we talked about XP and why you want it for leveling up in an earlier episode. Go back and check that out. But that gives you a kind of a quick idea of like how tough is this thing? And the challenge ratings go everywhere from 0, 1 eighth, 1 fourth, 1 half, 1, and then up into the 30, to 30, I think is the highest it'll go. And so that kind of gives you an idea of how many of these things you should throw at it. I know a lot of people are like, okay, it gives you a general idea, but exactly how many do I throw at them? What's going to make it easy for them? How do I not kill my party unless they've been particularly bad? I'm letting some old wounds come out. So there is a chapter in the Dungeon Master's Guide in Chapter 3 that lists that for you. It's actually on page 82. And it's going to give you a chart here by experience points, which is kind of interesting. There's actually a different way to do it that I'll talk about here next, but it gives you, okay, what's the character's level? How easy, medium, hard, or deadly do you want this experience to be? And you pick that XP value. So say they're third level, you want it to be a medium difficulty. That's 150 XP. And you do that for each character in your party. If everyone is level 3 and you have 4 people, then great. Then you just get 60 XP worth of monsters. And so that's why these the challenge ratings right here say how much XP that is, because if you're using the calculation from the Dungeon Master's Guide, you can use that. Now, there's some complications, as I'm sure you're aware. You can actually have some modifiers to this, because on lower on that same page in the Dungeon Master's Guide in 82, it gives you multipliers by the number of creatures available. So if you have just one monster, great. So he's going to get to use all 600 of that XP and be a big, beefier, kind of like solo monster. But if there's two of them, you multiply the XP by 1.5. If there's 3 to 6, you multiply it by 2, and so on and so forth. And so the more monsters there are, the weaker they have to be to represent that total XP value, because it comes down to the action economy. More monsters, the more times they can attack. If you get overrun by even like a bunch of like measly goblins, if you're higher level, if they get more attacks, even if their attack score is kind of bad, they have more chances to hit and to critical hit, and you could become overrun. And you see this all over fantasy media, you know, even things like Halo, you can get overrun by a bunch of little guys because there's a swarm of them, or in StarCraft, or in Helm's Deep with all the orcs running at them. You know, they have great defenses, but there's just so many guys. So that's why that modifier is there.
Now, I've had the opposite problem, and I'm curious what your take is that I've found that using those charts way too easy. I've had to constantly go what I feel like is significantly above and beyond what the charts recommend for my party. And now maybe that's because I have 7 people in my party. Maybe not, I'm not sure, but I've actually really struggled with this and trying to balance what is reasonable for, you know, a fairly engaging combat, that it's not just like, all right, well, you know, we'll just go in and do this. I'm going to sip my latte while I, you know, like super easy.
They're sipping their travel mug while defeating the beholder.
Basically, like, it's what it felt like.
This should be a lot harder, you guys. Yeah.
And I've heard, and I don't know if any of this is true, this is just my like investigations into the internet and what I've heard other people say, but I've heard that 5th edition is actually geared more towards the storytelling aspect of D&D, and so the combats are not as brutal as older versions, which the combats were a lot more intense, but the story mechanics were maybe lacking a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, especially if you go back and look at the two preceding editions, 4th edition and 3.5, they were very tactics heavy and very crunchy with the rules. And so they really were much more about battle, the combat system of the game. And I really do feel like 5th edition is harkens back to 2nd edition and earlier, where it really was more about the story and the role playing and all that kind of stuff. And if you think about it, seeing the role play kind of aspect of 5th edition in things like Critical Role, that has led to a huge cause of the growth of the industry, the growth of the hobby in the last several years. And so it's not surprising. But I think one of the ways that you can fix this problem is a couple of things. Is one, you have to realize when they're putting these things out, they're recognizing that you can probably throw 2 to 4 encounters at your party before they get a short rest or a long rest. And so, yeah, that first battle might be really easy. That third battle, oh my gosh, when they haven't had a chance to rest and they're low on potions and spell slots, suddenly those same 4 goblins look a lot more terrifying. And so I think that we have to realize that if this is going to be the only encounter that they have before they get a chance to rest and get into the second kind of half of the episode after the bathroom break, you know, and cooking
break,
that we realize we need to ratchet it up, not from medium or normal, but to maybe hard or deadly, because this is the only thing they're going to do before they get to kind of reset in some ways. And so it's built knowing there's going to be multiple encounters. And if you don't do that, it's throwing the calculations off.
Okay.
The other thing is that if you're like me, you love giving cool, shiny new toys to your players in the form of magic items, which can severely throw off the relative power rating of your party. And you realize, oh, I need to treat them like they're 6th level, not 5th level, or even 7th level, and then reassess why you gave them so many cool things so early on, and maybe change that. So there's always, you can always kind of ratchet things up and treat them like they're a higher level or make combats more deadly by doing this. The other thing too is that you don't have to always put all your pieces on the board right away. And what I mean by that is you could say, okay, so they're going to encounter this group of goblins, but what they don't know is around the corner are 2 orcs that are kind of like the coming back from a reconnaissance mission, and they're going to turn the corner in the second round and kick this thing up a notch. And what I like about doing that, not only is it make combat more interesting, but if you realize like, oh, I way underprepared for this, they really do need to be harder, I can bring those guys out of waiting in the wings and make the whole combat different. Or if mm-hmm. I realize, oh, this is much harder than I thought it was going to be, I don't know what I was thinking, why did the goblins have guns, I don't know what I was doing there, maybe don't include those orcs and leave them out of the picture. And so you have a chance to kind of adjust the scene according to how things are going and if it's still fun or still challenging for the party. So that's what I would say about that.
And last question on that topic, as far as like you were saying, the action economy, do you feel like with bigger groups that you need to have a minimum of X many monsters or more to make that action economy reasonable? Because I mean, when I'd have 1 higher challenge rating monster against 7 characters, it would mm-hmm. get 7 hits, and then it would only be able to hit 1 time, 1 person.
Right.
And it was just like, even if it was a hard monster, it was kind of ridiculous. So do you think that you should have a minimum of a couple of monsters if you have larger groups, or do you think it doesn't matter?
No, I think it does matter. And I think that if you're going to have a solo monster, he needs to feel like a boss or a mini boss, like in a video game. And that's why as you get up in challenge ratings, more and more of the monsters have multi-attack or have multiple things they can do with a single action. And even some really big bads have things called legendary actions, which let them do extra special things in between the turns of the other players. And so they're simulating the interactions of actually many more foes, even though they're a singular thing. A good example of this is some of the older or higher challenge rating dragons. They have their fear, they have a bite attack, 2 claws, and then they have a couple legendary actions that they can do as well, or they can do their big AOE area of effect thing with their breath weapon. And so if you're going to have a solo, make sure that it has multiple ways to attack and ways to use multiple things in a single round, so it fills out that space. Because I don't care how high the AC is or how many hit points it is, if they get to do one swipe and then you have seven other attacks plus clever characters with magic items and bonus attacks, it's not going to go well, and you can only target one person. So like the threat and the heat's only on like the one person, probably the guy up in front who knows he has a lot of hit points and AC, he can take it. Whereas all the squishy people get to hang out in the back casting all their best spells. So it becomes a little easy. I do want to say like two more things about encounters. There's actually a much better table that you can use in Xanathar's Guide to Everything that you can actually find in that book on page 88 and 90, where it doesn't give it to you in order of XP, but of challenge rating, which I think most people know those challenge ratings way better. And actually it's much faster to search that on a tool like D&D Beyond. And so here it gives you a tool for a solo monster that says how many characters in, how many characters are in your party. You're like, oh, six. Okay, well, what level are they? Well, they're level five. Great. You can throw a challenge rating 9 solo monster at them. And you're like, oh, that's actually a pretty big monster. That's cool. Like I can throw like, I think they could probably take on a beholder at that level. That's awesome. That's great. But then if you go back to page 90, then it gives you a chart of multiple monsters, and they're not giving you these fractions. Multiply it by 1.5. Get out of here with that mess. It actually says it has a little ratio. So a number, two dots, and another number, where it says, okay, for this many characters, have this many monsters at this challenge rating. So it'll say things like 2-1. So it's going to take 2 characters per monster to defeat them at this level and this many characters. And so you're like, oh, okay, I see how I can do this. And if I want to gooch it up a little bit, I can add like one extra monster in there or 2 more monsters to make it more deadly. And so the chart in Xanathar's on 88, 90, I use that way, way more than I ever do in the Dungeon Master Guide. I was trying to think what the second thing was. What was it? I have no idea. Okay, so encounters, monsters, Xanathar's Guide. I have no idea what the other idea was. Let it go, I guess. All right, sorry.
Maybe it'll come back later.
Yeah.
No, I think that's helpful because that's easily been two of my biggest problems as a DM with combat is trying to equalize those with my party to still make sure it's an engaging experience. And so I think, you know, the whole thing with being a DM, you have to sink time into it up front. You know, you need to be looking at your players' character sheets to see what they excel in, where their magic items are, where all of this is, so you can get a big holistic view and maybe tweak what you need to. Like you said, maybe you treat them like level 6, even though they're level 5, because of these magic items or some of these different like things that have happened throughout the campaign. And I think that's definitely an area I need to get into. Did you remember what it was?
I did remember. So also too, when you're looking at your monsters, it can get really boring really fast if it's just a bunch of rounds of, does 17 hit? Take 7 damage. Does this hit? No, it misses. You know, that kind of stuff. Start looking at the abilities of the different monsters and see what they do. Even our lowly goblin here, they give you some clues as to a good way of using them because they have two features. They have stealth plus 6, and then they have nimble escape, which is the next thing in their stat block. It says the goblin can take the disengage or hide action as a bonus action on each of its turns. So what that means is that they're not going to be like big frontline fighters. You could put a bunch of them in there and have them sneak around in the shadows and take pot shots at the party and then use their bonus action to hide. And as a small creature, it's really easy for them to do that or to get 3/4 cover or full cover and have this kind of asymmetric warfare going on that suddenly becomes a very interesting and potentially frustrating fight for your party. And so start looking at what some of these monsters can do and think about, well, what would be a scenario where I get to use that to the monster's maximum benefit to make the fight interesting and a little bit different. And there's an excellent book and website that talks about this. It's called The Monsters Know What They're Doing. It's Combat Tactics for Dungeon Masters by Keith Ammon. It's an excellent book that you can buy on Amazon, but he also has a website at themonstersknow.com. He's not a sponsor, but let's just call him a sponsor for now, where you can look up different kinds of monsters, and he breaks down what kind of role a monster like this would play in a battle, so that you can go, oh, okay, so they're going to try these kinds of tactics, and even suggest like some pairings with these monsters, like wine and cheese, of how these guys could be good frontline fighters, and then have these guys skulking in the back, and have this guy doing this other thing, and how they might behave so that the monsters behave in a way that is makes sense to what they are and is advantageous to the things that they're good at, just like your players do. The wizard knows he can wreak havoc on the playing field as long as he doesn't keep getting hit all the time, and so he stays in the back. Well, your monsters are probably good at that too, and so give them the chance to behave as they should to make the combat interesting.
Right, that one's been on my wish list for a while. I just haven't taken the plunge yet. I think I need to, though.
Christmas is coming up.
It is. It's going to be all. It's going to be a D&D Christmas.
Oh, yeah, it is.
A couple other things about monsters. One question that I have is, and this is going to sound like a stupid question, but do they always have to follow the combat rules? Or do they get a little bit of leniency just based off of story or other things that kind of need to happen a certain way? Like, where is it, black and white? I mean, nothing with D&D is black and white, but what is your opinion or what is your take?
I would say, generally speaking, they follow the same rules of interaction and combat like your players do. However, the goal of D&D is to have fun. And so if it's more fun to have them choose not to obey the rules for narrative reasons, I say go for it. In the reboot of the sci-fi show, what's it called? Not Babylon 5, not Star Trek. It's the one with the Cylons. Which one's that?
Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica. Thank you. Someone asked one of the showrunners, how fast do their fighters fly? And he says, oh, they fly at the speed of plot. The speed of plot? Yeah, they always arrive exactly when they need to for the sake of the plot. And I was like, that's a great piece of advice. So remember, you're telling a great story. And so if they need to have some kind of special ace in the hole, or they need to move a little further than their stat block says they can for the sake of the plot, I say go for it. If you've taken the bad guy down to like 13 minus hit points and he's like super dead, but you need him to say a final word or a final curse or a cryptic message that's going to lead the plot on later. Oh yeah, he's got a few minutes to like kind of cough up blood and bile and say his final cool line. So I think that's totally okay. I just wouldn't abuse it or do it in such a way that makes it obvious to your players because they might catch on. But as long as you're having fun with it, I think they're going to be okay.
And as long as it's for a purpose, not just trying to mess with your players, if it serves a purpose. Cool. Thanks so much for tuning into the Compendium this week, guys. I hope you enjoyed listening to the conversation that Jason and I had. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast so that you're always the first to know every time a new episode is published. They come out every Tuesday and Friday, or if you're a patron on our Patreon account, every Monday and Thursday, since you'll get them a day early. If you'd like to learn more between episodes, you can always follow us on social media by looking up the Compendium, C-O-M-P-E-N-D-M, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.